This podcast was recorded Thursday, January 2nd at 11.07 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like those math geeks will stop saying the new decade begins in 2021, not yesterday. We're in a new decade. Get over it.
Better yet, who cares? Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd politicians, also known as Snollygosters, who this year, Mike, finally resolved to work across the aisle. I'm Steve Brown.
And they're going to get things done. This is the year they get things done. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, we'll make our New Year's resolutions and our predictions, bound to be correct, of course.
Of course. This is the first episode of the year. So far, so good. You often say that when you walk in the office early. How are things going, Mike? It's still early, Steve. It's still early.
So far, so good.
Since it has been pretty quiet, since it is the second of the year, it's the holiday week, we'll spend this episode looking ahead at 2020, what we think will be the big political stories in the state this year.
Of course, there will be no bigger story than the presidential campaign. Ohio's primary is set for March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. 14 Democrats and 2 Republicans have filed to appear on the ballot running for president. A lot will happen between now and then.
We don't have time for another impeachment, do we? Probably not. You never know.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm joking. I'm talking
about balloting between now
I know,
and then.
I'm joking. I'm saying things change quickly with the Trump administration. The caucusing and the voting begins next month in Iowa and New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina. Then comes Super Tuesday, March 3rd, when 14 states hold primaries. And American Samoa holds its caucus. Can't forget about them.
Don't want to forget about them.
And then a couple more weeks of primaries. All told, 25 states will have primaries or caucuses before Ohio holds its primary on March 17th. So will Ohio's primary election even matter if the field is pretty well set by then?
It all depends, I think, on how Joe Biden does in Iowa and New Hampshire. If he is competitive, not even win, but if he is competitive in those two states and then wins, as he's expected to, in South Carolina, especially, and then in Nevada, I think that Ohio's primary may not matter. But if it's tight and there's no clear winner coming out of the February primaries and caucuses, and Super Tuesday is still competitive, then certainly Ohio's primary will matter.
I could see a majority of Democratic voters coalescing behind a candidate by the time we get to Ohio, which is really a shame because we pride ourselves on being such a politically important state. And then March 17th could roll around and it'd be Joe Biden or Pete Buttigieg, whoever it might be. That would be a shame if we're not that important in the election, just from a selfish point of view.
The primary season really should not end after Iowa and New Hampshire, which sometimes it does. I mean, those two states certainly do not represent the country as a whole. You know, South Carolina is predominantly the Democratic vote is dominated by African American voters, so that your diversity comes in there. But Iowa and New Hampshire certainly do not represent diverse Americans, certainly not diversity in the Democratic Party. So I think Super Tuesday will settle things, but if not, then we'll move on to Ohio. You know, Ohio's primary did matter in 2008 somewhat. Barack Obama did have a good lead over Hillary Clinton, but Hillary Clinton, as you recall, won Ohio's primary in 2008 and continued the primary fight for another month or so after that. So it was like her last stand was in Ohio, and she did well here and extended the primary fight for another few weeks.
How'd that work out for her in 2008?
Not
so well.
Didn't work out. No.
Did not work out. Worked out well for Obama, but not for Hillary. No, like I said, I who knows? Right? There could be 5 more bombshells that drop before then. There could be some kind of Joe Biden access Hollywood video. Who knows what's out there, right? I mean, it's more than 2 months away. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and Super Tuesday is Michael Bloomberg's test. He's sort of ignoring Iowa and New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and even South Carolina and Nevada. He's putting all his money, millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars, into Super Tuesday primary ads. We'll see how effective that is, see if he's a factor. Maybe Ohio will have to decide if Mike Bloomberg is the Democratic nominee.
That'd be interesting. We are speculating at this point because there's not been an Ohio poll in quite some time. The Quinnipiac University, a major polling institute that polls in Ohio, they're out of Connecticut, I believe.
Yes.
But they have not done an Ohio poll since July.
No, I think it's kind of indicative of you know, how Ohio's status as a bellwether may have slipped a little bit. I think you're seeing more polls out of Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania now than you are out of Ohio. I think a lot depends on who the nominee is. And I think after the primary season, we'll see more polling here in Ohio.
You did mention real quickly that our primary is on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Do you think that has any kind of measurable effect? I mean,
I don't, right?
I mean, it's not a major holiday. Most people still work that day. I mean, some people take it off to go to the bar at 10 a.m., but not many, really.
Some people are saying that parades in some city will keep people from getting to the polls, or they may have to move polling locations. I just think the effect will be minimal.
I do as well. I mean, there was some reporting on that. There was some serious straight-faced reporting on whether this will have any kind of impact. I mean,
you don't travel for St. Patrick's Day, just down to the neighborhood pub, perhaps, but you don't go out of town with early voting. If you're really a person who plans out your St. Patrick's Day activities, you could vote early. You could have a party at the polls, St. Patrick's party at the polls.
That'd be fun.
It's a get out the vote strategy, you know?
Everyone would be sober, right? Of course.
Absolutely.
Of course.
You know?
Why wouldn't they be? Gun control, also a major issue that is expected to continue playing out in 2020 here in Ohio. A lot of movement on the issue, but no real action in 2019. There was the horrific shooting in Dayton in the summer of 2019 that prompted Governor DeWine's Strong Ohio plan, included a litany of things. He wanted to expand the so-called pink slipping, where you can separate a person from their guns. He wanted to include mentally ill people and also people suffering from chronic substance abuse. It hasn't gone anywhere. It also included a quote, mandatory, mostly a voluntary background check system. Hasn't really gone anywhere at this point. And like I've said before on this podcast, I think I was surprised that people kept talking about it as much as they did, because oftentimes after shootings like what happened in Dayton, it's an issue for a couple weeks and then it goes away. If any change happens, it's in the immediate aftermath.
Yeah, I don't see gun control legislation
not with this house
advancing at all, to be honest. I mean, yep. I think that the compromise they're going to end up with is they don't do anything. I think that the Stand Your Ground bill, which is out there, which would eliminate our duty to retreat before shooting someone in public places, Mike DeWine has said he will not sign that until his plan gets approved and he has a chance to sign that. I don't think DeWine's plan will get approved it's written right now, and I think that Stand Your Ground, that'll be the compromise. The compromise won't be do something, it'll be let's do nothing, which kind of is doing something in this state, because every time a piece of gun legislation comes before lawmakers, it erodes gun restrictions. It moves in the opposite directions towards gun rights, so maybe doing nothing is something. But
at least slowing down the train.
I'm
skeptical about DeWine not signing Stand Your Ground. I think there would be so much pressure on him from at least a vocal minority. I would think a majority of Republicans support Stand Your Ground, and I think he would sign it. He said that he supports Stand Your Ground in theory. Sure, he would rather we focus on keeping guns out of the hands of dangerous people. I don't doubt his intentions there at all, but faced with the decision of signing Stand Your Ground or not signing it, I'm skeptical that he would not sign
it. Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, there might be something from his gun safety plan that the legislature can pass, like tougher penalties for folks who sell a gun to someone who shouldn't have it, which is already on the books, but they're tougher penalties. And he could say, look, I got this part of my plan, and I'll sign this, and I'll sign the Stand Your Ground. If you heard the interview that we did with him last week, it's back on our podcast feed if you missed it. You know, he's spinning and selling his current plan pretty hard, even though it's much watered down from his original plan. And he could do the same with a Stand Your Ground compromise.
Yeah. I'll be interested to watch what happens with gun control in 2020. I don't see much happening.
One important thing is that it won't be on the ballot in 2020. There was some talk that there was an effort to get
background
checks on the ballot in 2020. Well, the group pushing that has now said no, they're going to shoot for 2021. So that removes the incentive for lawmakers to do something on their own rather than have the voters decide what to do. So with that no longer on the table, there's really no urgency on lawmakers' part to pass a background check portion of this gun safety package.
Yeah, we thought they might have been pushed into action by Dennis Willard, the guy who is leading that movement, but You're right. Without that political pressure, they might not need to act. Another issue that often dominates headlines here in Ohio, abortion. Strict anti-abortion legislation is out there that would make all abortions illegal and require doctors to try to implant an ectopic pregnancy. That's a procedure that medical professionals say does not exist. And they say this bill is not based in any kind of logical science that's out there right now. The authors, John Becker, the guy who wrote the bill, said he did not talk to any medical professionals. He talked to a lobbyist when he wrote this bill. In the legislature, Ohio Public Radio reported last week that there were 21 abortion-related bills that passed in 2019, and there are more, obviously, on the horizon, this being one. The heartbeat bill has been put on hold by a federal court. I don't know what else they can do besides try to fully ban abortion. And any honest anti-abortion activist will tell you that's their goal. Yep. There's different strategies on how to do it.
My guess is this will be basically the same as what we saw with the heartbeat bill, the one that bans abortion as early as 6 weeks in the pregnancy. Mainstream anti-abortion groups like Ohio Right to Life, stayed out of it until there was a change on the Supreme Court. Should there be a change in the Supreme Court this year, or if President Trump is reelected and he gets to appoint another justice in his second term, then you would see, I think, that bill pass the legislature. I think right now they're afraid that, like they were with the heartbeat bill, as the court was comprised then, that if it went before the Supreme Court, that it would hurt their efforts to overturn Roe versus Wade rather than help them. My guess is until there's another conservative justice on the Supreme Court, that the Ohio legislature may just let this one sit out there on the shelf for a little while.
Yeah, it's really confusing to not get these bills mixed up with each other. I mean, there are 21 abortion-related bills that passed the legislature in 2019, and you can look at the makeup of the legislature and tell all 21 restrict abortion rights. There are no bills that pass this legislature to expand abortion rights.
Certainly not.
And again, I don't know what else they can do. It's going to go to the Supreme Court eventually, you would think. The court in recent years does not have an issue with overriding previous court decisions. One might think with Roe v. Wade, the court might not weigh in at all, but that's not an obstacle anymore. A personal favorite story of ours from 2019, and it just could be in 2020 as well, the nuclear bailout law.
HB6.
Yeah,
it's back.
HB6.
Well, hasn't completely died yet.
It's never completely gone away. House Bill 6, or the nuclear bailout as we fondly call it, provides subsidies to two unprofitable nuclear power plants in order to prop them up to keep them from going bankrupt. It also allows utilities to collect subsidies that would go to some failing coal plants. So it's not a clean energy bill. That's how it was billed a lot by Republicans who supported it, because it supports nuclear energy. Whatever. The Ohio Supreme Court has agreed to hear arguments over whether the bailout opponents deserve more time to collect signatures in order to put a referendum on the ballot.
Yeah, if you recall, they had 90 days to collect signatures, but the clock started when the legislature passed the bill and the governor signed it. But it took a few weeks for the Attorney General's office to approve the language of the petitions. And so the folks who are out there trying to collect signatures say they deserve 38 more days. The clock should not have started until the final language was approved. They need 266,000 valid signatures. They've gathered 221,000 so far. Generally, you need to collect double what you need.
So you say, what they've collected have not been vetted.
Yeah, so generally, they're going to need 500,000 signatures. So they need, even if the Supreme Court says, yeah, you get your 38 days, they would need to collect more than 330,000 signatures in those 38 days. Very difficult to do. It is possible, though, if a ruling comes down in their favor before one of the elections this year, before the March primary, if they can extend it until November, because then the petition signature gatherers could go to the polls. And your success rate of getting valid signatures improves greatly if you can get out to the polls mm-hmm. and get people going in to vote or coming out from voting and get them to sign. That, to me, is the only chance they have of making this happen if the ruling is in their favor. It's a Hail Mary. We're in football season, playoff season, bowl season.
Hail Marys occasionally work.
Yes,
not,
they do.
Not usually, but occasionally.
This is their Hail Mary.
This is one of the strangest stories that we've ever covered. We had both the pro HB6 side, Carlo Leparo, in here with us. We also had the anti-HB6 side, Gene Pierce, making their very passionate arguments. I think even the most objective person could agree that the pro HB6 side was deceptive. You might even say lying with their ads where they tried to directly tie.
The Chinese are coming.
Right, right. Remember all those ads with the Chinese army goose-stepping through the streets of Columbus? They tried to make it seem like the Chinese are trying to grab major foothold in our energy sector. And you can kind of tie yourself in knots and make that case, but there are foreign investments in every industry, and that's what was happening in Ohio's energy industry. It was a great story. It's going to continue to be in the headlines at least a little bit going into 2020.
So the Supreme Court will not rule on the tactics of the campaign.
No, they will rule on whether.
Just the timing and the bureaucracy of getting petitions approved and whether or not they had enough time to collect the signatures. They will not rule on the tactics, the overly aggressive tactics, the strange ads, the petition blockers. Remember those guys who were out trying to convince people not to sign?
And then there were blockers, right?
Yes.
Great story. Any resolutions for 2020?
I'm going to be less cynical in 2020.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Why?
I don't know. That's my resolution.
That's not a good political podcast. I need more cynicism from you. That's my resolution, to be a bigger jerk in 2020.
No resolutions for me. Just one thing I think that we as journalists, I think, should do is try to pay attention to things that don't directly involve Donald Trump. There are a lot of stories just in the past month that sort of got swept under the rug. The Washington Post's Afghanistan papers are incredible. And they hardly got on the discussion table because of the impeachment. And there are other things. The size of the farm bailout is now rivaling the auto bailout. And these stories get sort of lost with all the furor over the latest Trump tweet. So hopefully we as journalists and reporters can resolve to cover things that are important that don't involve a rant by the president.
Hear, hear. It's very uplifting.
Yes.
It's very non-Snollygoster. Look at you. Speaking of Snollygosters, it's time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award. Enough with all this optimism. Let's get back to talking trash about people. This is the award that we give to our shrewdest politician or political move of the week. This week it goes to our aw shucks governor, Mike DeWine.
Yes, it's a first-time Snollygoster of the Week award for Governor DeWine. Now, here's the background. As you know, President Trump has left it up to governors to decide if their states will welcome refugees. The president's executive order says the State Department will only resettle refugees. These are legal refugees in areas where state and local governments give permission. That order has put some Republican governors in a tough spot. They want to welcome refugees, but they don't want to upset President Trump or his supporters.
So what did Mike DeWine do? He told the president on Christmas Eve that Ohio will accept refugees. DeWine correctly points out that Ohio has a long and successful history of welcoming and assimilating refugees from around the world, but he did it on Christmas Eve.
Yes, when no one is paying attention, or very few are paying attention, and frankly, it's hard to criticize a humanitarian political position on the night before Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus.
But it is easy for political skeptics to ask why, Mike DeWine, did you release this letter on Christmas Eve?
I think he was in the,
it was
in
a
the
news
spirit
dump.
Of Christmas.
It was a news dump.
The spirit of Christmas.
It was a new, Mike DeWine is evidently very skilled in the tactics of the news dump. My favorite Christmas Eve news dump, actually a year ago, Columbus Police Chief Kim Jacobs announced on Christmas Eve she was going to retire. How coincidental that the spirit of Jesus just made her feel like she should spend more time outside of work.
All right. So whether it was the spirit of Christmas or just a shrewd news dump, Mike DeWine, you get our Snollygoster of the Week Award.
Congrats. I think it's his first time, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, look at Mike. Not much of a Snollygoster. You would think this deep into his campaigning and being governor, he would have had more of these awards. But anyway, so if you want to send us a suggestion for next week, please do. You can send that in an email to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, in this new year, be sure to tell your friends about Snollygoster and leave us a good review on iTunes as well. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.